Okay, welcome everyone. I'm calling to order the Beacon Hill Architectural Commission public hearing, calling the hearing to order at 5:02 p.m. on March the 16th, 2023. This is the March 2023 hearing of the Beacon Hill Architectural Commission. I am the chairman, Mark Kiefer, and I'm joined this evening by Commission Vice Chair Arian Allen and Commissioners Fleck, Given, Richmond, and Wen. So again, welcome everyone. Today, the commission will be holding a public hearing to review applications in accordance with the Commonwealth of Massachusetts Executive Order suspending certain provisions of the open meeting law, including the July 16, 2022 amendment extending the suspension of these provisions until March 31st, 2023. We are conducting this meeting online, which is to say over Zoom. To ensure public access to deliberations of the Beacon Hill Architectural Commission, the public may access this call through telephone and video conferencing. The hearing, as you, I think you heard, is being recorded. So all further conversations between commissioners should be audible to the public in attendance until the hearing has adjourned. And at this point, we'd like to acknowledge any media or elected officials present. Are there any media or elected officials?
Hi, Mark. Dan Murphy from the Beacon Hill Times here.
Hi, Dan. Welcome. Thanks for joining. Anyone else? I don't think I see any. Nick, do you see any?
Don't see any.
Oh, okay. Members of the public will have an opportunity to ask questions and provide public comment on applications and discussions. And to do so, please raise your hand in the application, which is, say, in Zoom, rather than your physical hand, because Nick might not see you. Here is a handy, some tips on the screen to show you just how to do that if you're not familiar with it. There's a button down at the bottom of your screen on your Zoom panel. And so raise your hand by clicking on participants and so forth, as you see under the instructions here. If you have any trouble with this or at any time, you can message Nick in the chat and he will get you squared away. And we will also, just as a reminder, when we adjudicate each application, we'll let you know when it's time for us to take public comment. And at that point, Nick will acknowledge anyone who wishes to be heard on the record. If you do want to be heard on the record, you need to raise your hand on Zoom and make your comments. You don't have to have your camera on, but if you just put something in the chat, that will not become part of the official record. So again, please raise your hand in the Zoom when the time comes if you want to be heard in the public comment portion. Let's see. I think we are ready to go.
Mark, just a point of clarification. So the chat will not become part of a record, but it will be recorded and stored on files for access if someone were to request it. So just be mindful of that.
Thank you. Yes. So keep that in mind when using the chat function. Okay. Moving on to the agenda. The first portion of the agenda is violations. And the first item on the agenda is 87 Beacon Street. Is there a representative of 87 Beacon present?
All right, let's see her here. I'm just gonna.
Yes, this is Aileen Benson from 87 Beacon Street. I'm here.
Hi, Aileen, welcome. Do you want to tell us about, the violation in question for your property, 87 Beacon, concerns the intercom panel that was installed at the front entrance. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And as we understand it, what you've installed is one of these, for lack of a better term, sort of iPad-like electronic, thank you, Nick, displays as shown in the photo that Nick has put up here. Is that correct? The Butterfly MX intercom system. Yes.
Yes, that's it exactly.
Okay. So as Nick has probably previewed for you, this particular model of intercom for this purpose is problematic according to our guidelines. And so what we're here to do tonight is rectify this. And can you tell us what you would propose to do in that regard?
So the architect who drafted our proposal for the solution should be on the call, and he had offered to speak to the proposal on my behalf.
Nick, oh, sure.
Do you see him on here? Do you see Don?
I don't see Don's name. He did mention that he would be here.
Yeah.
I do see some phone numbers that are on the call.
Don, if you are on the call or one of the folks who are calling in, could you try to make yourself known one way or the other at this time? Okay, well, maybe we can raise Don in a minute, but we've got, I believe, Nick, we've got the materials that describe the proposed remedy for this situation. Is that right?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So I think we can proceed. And again, Don, if you're there or if you join, just let us know. Can we bring those up? And Aileen, do you mind speaking to this just for the time being? Because I think we can proceed.
Yeah, I'll do my best. I'm sure Don would do a better job than I'm going to be able to, but I will definitely speak to it and I'll do my best with this.
Thank you.
So,
go ahead, please.
Okay, sorry. So we've got the extra steel plate around what you can see in the photos, the additional steel plate anchoring the actual Butterfly MX unit in place. And that was done because the previous intercom system was larger. So we've got some photos there. You can see kind of the space when that's removed. So the proposed solution involves filling in absolutely as much of that wood paneling as possible. I had an installer.
Just to pause you for a second, it looks like Don's here now.
Oh, yay, good.
go for it, Don. No worries.
Late from a job site. So have you seen the drawings yet or just looking at the photos?
We're looking at the photos right now, Don.
Okay, great. So the task was to see what can be done to restore the look of the wood panel relative to this and cover the illuminated box. So at the upper left is the current panel. The intercom panel is much smaller than a larger backplate that's brushed stainless. So we had the installer remove it so we could see what the former intercom system was, which is the picture at the right. And you can see that the reason they put that big stainless backer panel on it was to cover the former cuts that went into the stiles on each side of the panel. So we measured all that. On the lower left is just the postal workers' key box, and to show the sizes of the panels and the molding that's all around. On the lower right is the back side of the current panel. So the gray part is the panel proper, and the larger brush stainless is the cover panel that conceals the former cutouts. So next slide. So we have a series of drawings here. This shows the existing layout. So the outer part of the stainless steel panel with the inner part of the intercom system and the surrounds with the intact panel below and intact panel above. So when we remove things, next slide, we're able to see the cutout that was there, slide two. So the edge that goes around is what cut into the stiles on each side. And then we dashed in the intercom box and the backer box for it, and also the oversized plate. So if you go to the next slide, this shows how we intend to restore what's there. There's not enough space to actually have the intercom panel in the recessed of the surround. So instead, we're proposing to do a beaded edge that matches the beaded edge of the molding that goes to the recess. So to do blocking around the perimeter and to at least restore the integrity of the style on each side, patch that in and put a beaded edge around. And then the next slide shows how the intercom panel will mount to that restored surround. You had it there. So that's the intercom panel. And then the fifth slide is showing a cover that'll be a hinge cover with inscribed letters 87 Beacon Street and pull to open that'll cover the illuminated panel. So very similar to other panels that you've seen. This would have a satin lacquered finish. The hardware on the door is a satin brass. You can do, mill finish, you can do polished, you could do dark bronze. It seemed appropriate to do a satin finish. So that's the proposed fix, so that you don't see the illuminated cover anymore and that you restore the integrity of the surround to the extent it's possible given the size of the intercom, which is much smaller than the prior intercom panel.
Okay, thank you very much, Don. Just clarifying question, because I'm afraid I can't quite read it. It may be my eyesight on this diagram. Presumably the cover is sort of proud of the plane of the intercom panel by a little bit.
Yeah.
How much does it stick out?
Two inches I thought was sufficient. So it'll have a folded edge and it'll be open top and bottom. I think the top has a plate over it, but 2 inches is about all we need. I've seen others that have more because the panel behind it is thicker. So 2 inches is what we asked for, and they provided that. And then there's a hinge on the left side that's, piano hinge that's be mounted to the wood.
Right. Okay. And forgive me if I missed it at the outset. You were talking about, so there, you've created this beaded edge. Is the panel that the intercom will sit on, is that recessed at all from the stiles?
The panel that the intercom will sit on is flush with the stiles.
It is, okay.
Yeah. I thought it was the simplest way. I thought the key was to get the beaded part back. But recessing it, I think it becomes a little too fussy in terms of dimension.
Yeah, okay.
You'd have to make the cover a little thicker because you'd be putting things, further away from the surface.
All right, okay.
But there'll be very little showing. It'll be 3/16 a perimeter inside the edge of the bead. So not enough, I think, to discern a difference.
Ah, right, okay. Right. Okay, very good. My fellow commissioners, anyone have any other questions about what is proposed here? Okay, and again, Nick, just to clarify procedurally what we're dealing with here, we've cited this as a violation, but the applicant they've come back and they are applying for this proposed remedy. It's an application, right?
Correct. This is an official application so that what we can do is whatever you make a motion, if you decide to approve it, you can integrate the ratification of the violation within the motion.
Right. Okay. Okay. One last chance for commissioners if they have questions before we take public comment on this. Okay. Going once, going twice. Okay. A point in the proceedings will take public comment. Again, if you want to be heard on the record, please raise your hand in the Zoom function and Nick will acknowledge you in turn.
Okay, first up we have Holland Ward from the Civic Association. Holland, go ahead. Give that a try now, Holland. There you go.
Terribly sorry, first time on Zoom. we support ratification of the intercom system based on modifications as submitted. The applicant's removing the backplate and recreating lost wood trim paneling. Applicant is covering the existing intercom with a brass box. For this application, we reference the following district guidelines. E7 per doors and entries, intercom panel shall be contained if possible within the entryway of the building and preferably shall be flush mounted in the wood trim. Such panels shall have brass or bronze faces. Lighted or backlit intercom panels shall not be allowed. End of comment.
Thank you, Holland. I am not seeing any other public comment, so we can close the public comment portion of this application.
Okay. In light of the fact that I think the applicant has taken steps to affirmatively redress the violation and has proposed a remedy which is both consistent with our guidelines and consistent with the historical practice of that's in evidence in a number of other locations of covering such an intercom with a brass panel, and it is otherwise appropriate in materials and workmanship. I would move that the violation be dismissed and that the application for the remedy to the intercom system be approved as submitted.
I should say that.
Okay, thank you very much. It's been moved and seconded, and we will vote. Commissioner Allen?
Aye.
Commissioner Kiefer votes aye. Commissioner Fleck?
Aye.
Commissioner Gibbon?
Aye.
Commissioner Richmond?
Aye.
And Commissioner Wen?
Aye.
Okay, the motion carries. Thank you very much, Aileen and Don, very much for your attention to this and the thorough presentation. You'll get a letter from Nick spelling out the details and just memorializing this for your records.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you.
Thanks, Don.
Okay, next on the agenda, also a violation is number 6 Lewisburg Square. Do we have a representative from 6 Lewisburg Square present?
Yes, hi, Sandra.
Sandra, hi, Sandra. Welcome. Hi,
thank you.
I'm also here, William Rule.
Yeah.
Hi, William, thanks for joining.
Hello. Thanks.
So the violation in question in this case concerns the electric vehicle charging facility mounted in the sidewalk. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So you have, so, and it's there is a device that has been installed at this location. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We've got a handy diagram here, and this is indeed what we're talking about, right?
That's an inspiration image. We'll get to the actual installed image in a moment. There it is. Yep, on the left.
Okay. So if you could just describe for us just briefly what you have there, and which is the violation we've cited, and what you'd propose as a remedy, that'd be very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. So I'll start out just saying that, so we did apply for this EV charger back in, I think, early 2021. And the presentation materials that we shared previously showed an access cover that was a closer match to sort of the water, and I don't have a photo of it in here, but the gas or water access points on the sidewalk, and you know, sort of represented it actually at a smaller dimension, 4 to 6 inches, which is actually a lot smaller than the 8-inch charging head, which needs to be stored within it. So that was sort of our error and not fully representing the size of the charger head that we were fitting in there. So our actual notice of decision, the certificate of design approval, approved a flush mount access electric vehicle access cover, but referenced it as similar to those seen on the sidewalk for gas and water access. So I think there wasn't a dimension on the certificate of design approval, but this installed application is larger than some of the material that we had shared previously. So the installation here that we see is actually inspired by more of the coal chute that was shown on the previous page, which is kind of very present along Lewisburg Square. It is overall, including the flange, about 12 by 12 inches. And then it has an internal box, which has a dimension that tapers. I think it's about 10 by 10 towards the top and goes down from there to about 8 by 8. This is sort of not a custom made box. This is a fairly standard box that was acquired. It has a brass cover that was patinated to sort of resemble all the other elements along the sidewalk. So if you go to the next page, please, thank you. So part of the selection of this particular box had to do with sort of trying to, you know, consider future technology. You know, we're all used to whatever charging elements that are out there right now. This owner does happen to have the Tesla, but you know, they're thinking of getting another electric vehicle and that might have a different charging head. So I just kind of included this to show the different dimensions of various potential charging heads that are out on the market today. The Tesla one is about 1.5 by 8 inches long. The non-Tesla charging head is about 5.5 by 10 inches. And, you know, again, I think the owner is certainly intending to stick with electric vehicles in the future. And they certainly have concern for making sure that, you know, whatever is installed today is going to help them achieve those goals to drive electric in the future. So if you wouldn't mind going to the next page, you'll see the other primary concern for this installation was that the, you know, part of the language of the certificate of design approval was that it would be a flush mount cover. So when the charging is not occurring, it is of course flush mount, but one of the biggest priorities for trip hazards and, you know, just aesthetics was that we wanted to make sure that when the cover was closed and charging was happening, that we could get that cover to close and not be partially ajar. So you can see that in the bottom left image, that there is sort of a notch component that allows the cord to sort of feed out through the cover. I think also one of the things that is hard to represent in photos is that the charging head, when it joins with the actual cord that runs back to the building, it does have a little bit of rigidity to it. So despite the head sitting, maybe looking like it has ample room in the box, there is a little bit of like, kind of like the turn radius of a semi truck. Like you kind of gotta be able to get it out and on an angle. So there's a little bit of a maneuvering of that head as it kind of pulls out of the box. So that was part of the consideration, was just making sure that it was a smooth operation and that it was gonna function well. So those were the considerations that went into the contractor selecting this particular box. Do also have, I think, a video, but I don't know if that's helpful. I'm happy to share that as well.
So Mark, I do have a video because I asked them to take a video to show how the port operates, if that's helpful to you. It's up to you if you want to play it.
How long is it?
How long is it, Sandra? Like just a couple seconds, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah, go ahead, Nick. Yeah, why not? Sure.
All right, get your popcorn ready.
Right.
All right, 1 second here. Let me just change my screen. Share. Yep.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I think that's helpful. So
if I could just add just 1 second. One of the things that in the photos, it's shown with two hands being necessary to get the charger out of the box and then pull the cord up and connect to the car, as well as two hands to put everything back in the space. And the video shows that you really can get the charger out with one hand, but it still does take, because of the rigidity of the cord, it does take two hands. So when you're placing the charger back in its parking spot, it really does take two hands. So that was part of the complicating factor with how big the actual box dimension is, that it requires a certain amount of space for the actual charger, but also two hands to maneuver it. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. So is it, Sandra, is it your request this evening that we simply ratify what you've already done as a remedy for this violation?
That is correct. Yeah.
That's the homeowner's request, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, commissioners, any questions, clarifying questions or otherwise about either what they've installed or how it works or anything else for that matter about what they're proposing?
Yeah, this is Alice Richmond. I have a comment and a question. You know, I think you guys have done a really good job putting it flush with the sidewalk. I read something earlier today that it's actually, you actually were able to put more bricks back in because of it. And so, you know, I think I don't have any problem with this from a matter of aesthetics. What I have a problem with is, you know, why you guys didn't come back to the commission. And I do that not because I want to be picky about it, but because, you know, the idea that we, you know, have these hearings and we have these discussions, you know, if we simply, and maybe we will, I'm sort of on the fence right now, because I think you've done the right thing, but if we simply ratify, you know, something which ignored the original directive, I think we set a bad precedent for the rest of the community. So can you just tell us, having heard my view, why you didn't come back to the commission for more approval or different approval once you realized that you needed to do something differently than you had shown us?
Yeah, well, I mean, I definitely would say that when the contractor was installing this, the point of reference was the certificate of design approval, which, you know, highlighted the flush mount aspect and then, you know, the similarity to some of the gas and water access. And so without the presence of a dimension on there, I think there was a little liberty taken. I think there was, it was just kind of read as, you know, being flush and being, you know, an access point that was resembling these other elements within the sidewalk. And so, you know, I don't think there was anything malignant in that. I think, you know, it was a misinterpretation of that certificate of design approval. And so for that, we apologize for sure. I think maybe if there was a question about how to read that, you know, lesson learned that we could have approached and said, you know, is this still in keeping with that language? So.
Thank you.
Commissioner Richmond, a point of clarification. So the certificate of design approval doesn't reference the dimensions. However, it does request that construction documents be submitted to staff for final approval. Those construction documents did have the dimensions on them.
And so are you saying, Nick, that you actually saw them with the size that it was installed? Before it was installed?
That's correct. Would you like to see them?
No. But I'm just trying to understand the process. Sure. So that they did put them to staff and essentially correct. You said that this is okay, you can do this?
Correct.
Okay, thank you very much. That's very helpful.
Nick, just to further clarify though, when you say the drawings were submitted to staff and those drawings did have the dimensions, what were those dimensions? Were they the dimensions of about 12 by 12 of what's actually been installed and what we're looking at here, or were they something smaller?
They were 4 inch by 4 inch.
Okay, so Alice, just to be clear, what we're saying here is the dimensions were supplied, but they were smaller. So what was installed was not what was submitted with respect to the dimensions to staff, and that Nick then ostensibly signed off on.
Okay, well, that's, I'm now confused again.
Alice, do you see what's on the screen?
Yeah, so the original thing that we approved did not have dimensions on it, Nick?
They did.
They did. And the dimensions that were on it were what, 4 by 4?
I see them right here on the screen.
I'm
sorry, Alice. Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah, okay. So, the drawings that they submitted to you is smaller than what they actually.
Exactly.
Okay. So my original question then to them remains. I mean, they have drawings, they've been submitted, and they're incorrect. So I don't want to beat this to death, because I understand that, you know, I understand why they did what they did, but I'm still confused about why the drawings that were submitted to staff were still not accurate with respect to what was constructed.
I guess I could comment that at the time that those drawings were submitted, it was probably a year and a half before the box was selected. And so I think, you know, we had the 4 to 6 inches TBD to be decided. It was inaccurate. It was absolutely inaccurate. And so I think, you know, a year and a half after that, the, you know, contractor was relying on the certificate of design approval, and it was an oversight. It was absolutely an oversight to not follow up and say, oops, this dimension is half the size of the charger and we need to revise it. So I certainly, it was an oversight. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else, commissioners, questions or comments on this?
I have a question. So Nick, I'm reading your comments and you're saying that you tested out another model installed at a different location.
Yes, correct.
Do we have like drawings or photos or dimensions of the other model? Because you're saying that the other model, which I'm assuming is smaller, is working fine. So what am I correct in understanding that we have precedent of another application installation that's smaller and it's functioning?
So I'll let Sandra and Will answer that question, but I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that this model, the original model that was approved by our commission for this property, was based off of that model, which was pre-installed. Sandra, is that accurate?
So, and honestly, I did not do any of the drawings. This was the landscape architect's scope of work. And so I can't speak with firm knowledge of the size of the other one. The landscape architect may have known, but I'm not sure, to be honest.
There are several people on Lewisburg Square who want this a similar detail. I believe one was actually installed. And I believe it is smaller.
Yeah.
When the contractor and the subcontractors were talking with that group that were working on that, my recollection is that it wasn't necessary. It wasn't really going to work in the way that this connection works. So the original design intention was very ambitious. Make it as small as absolutely possible. No one wants to see anything that's any bigger than it has to be. But the reality is because our client uses this virtually every day, it has to actually work for his actual Tesla charger. And this was the smallest size that was determined to actually work. And so there was definitely some conversation among other neighbors. And
we weren't part of any of that, though, unfortunately. So
we were not privy to that, unfortunately, sadly. I wish I had been. It's a fascinating subject. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're kind of all trying to figure out how to do the best possible solution and the smallest solution. So our box works. It has a little bit of wiggle room to actually make the device connectable. And I think, you know, as Sandra said, there was a big oversight that we should have been before the commission, and we apologize for not having brought this dimension to Nick's attention earlier.
So Nick, I think that you already showed the picture, but let's show it again, because I need to understand if there's already other people in Beacon Hill working on a smaller model, and they've already been up here with the commission before, and that's okay for one thing, and other people in Beacon Hill have the same small model. You know, this is a historic neighborhood, and this is not adding to that, this is subtracting from that. So can we show them again a model that we find acceptable?
So the model that we approved and that the Lewisburg Square Neighborhood Association approved was the model that was the 4 to 6 inch model.
Can you show that on the screen again, please?
Sure. Yes. Sorry, I have to.
Up. And it works.
This was not a built installation.
I think this shows the intention.
But there is one like that in the neighborhood, right?
That's what I thought.
Yeah, Nick was saying it's near 11, right? Number 11.
Correct.
Lewisburg Square.
That's really close to 6.
And has that one been installed, Nick, to the best of your knowledge, at 11 Lewisburg Square?
Yeah. I know the Civic Association has photos of that. I wonder if that's in their comments.
I think that it is. It might be in the letter.
But it's very similar to what this photoshopped image looks like.
I don't believe it is in their comments. There's photos, but only of this one, I believe. Mm-hmm. So, Sandra and William, the reason we are asking about this, if it's not obvious, perhaps, is we believe and we appreciate that you might not have, of course, been privy to the conversations of other homeowners elsewhere in Lewisburg Square about similar applications, but we believe there is an extant version of a smaller installation of one of these, ostensibly for the exact same purpose, that was previously approved by the commission and since been installed. And so I think that the implied question, well, I'll just ask it directly, is why can't we make this smaller? And I think the prior approval of the smaller dimensions that we're seeing on the screen here and the albeit photoshopped imagining of what it might look like approximately just above is predicated to a certain extent, maybe a significant extent, on the understanding that such a smaller charging port exists because it's come before us before and we've approved one and we further believe that it's been installed. I'd also just say really quickly, we appreciate, of course, Lewisburg Square is a private way. The visibility of this as respects our jurisdiction is only what's visible from either of the public ways on either side, Mount Vernon or Pinckney Street. We realize this is some distance from Mount Vernon Street, and therefore the visibility is certainly not as significant as even perhaps other architectural features on this building elsewhere in your renovation. But as you would appreciate, the commission has had to deal over the years in its several decades now of existence, the advent of new technologies in a number of respects. And we have had to deal with these as they've evolved over time. And we of course, we recognize that new technologies are often necessary for modern living or safety or both. And so, you know, it's been the position of this commission pretty consistently over those decades to try to accommodate those new technologies in a way that's consistent, otherwise consistent with the historic district legislation generally and our guidelines specifically. For some of these technologies, we've adopted specific guidelines. For others, we have ostensibly de facto standards that reflect something that we think is generally consistent with the guideline. this new, you think of even something as simple as a pendant light above the door, which perhaps your house also has, or some kind of lighting fixture, which of course wouldn't have been a feature in a building that predates electricity, and so on. And so I think our task here, this is challenging from our perspective, because we know there are going to be more of these, certainly, but we're quite early on in this process. And so there haven't been enough of these yet for us to be motivated to, of necessity, to make a specific guideline like we have for other architectural features. But I think it's in everyone's best interest, in the interest of the commission and the community, to as quickly as possible move at least to a de facto standard. And the principle I think we've used over time to accommodate new technologies is, you know, to make them as innocuous as possible. And so because we're so early on in what is likely to be an increasing stream of applications for things like this as electric vehicles become more common, we want to try to get this right on the front end. And I think, again, it's in everyone's best interest to do that. And so in the spirit of trying to make this as innocuous as possible, you know, that's why we're giving so much attention to just how big it is, because yeah. I think we really want to make it as small as possible. And so if it's possible to make it smaller, we want to do that. That's where we're coming from.
I understand that point of view for sure. I think if there's one thing that the owner expressed to us, you know, we are very much presenting their concerns as well here. You know, they are considering a vehicle that is not a Tesla, and, you know, they're definitely concerned that, you know, sizing a box that is, you know, fit specific to this one Tesla charger is really potentially a bit of a dead end for them. And they, you know, there are different charging heads, the different sizes. The one that is in the video and the photos is the smallest one, and I believe that's the same one installed at this neighboring property. They're certainly concerned that this could be obsolete within months if they, you know, if they get a different vehicle, and then, you know, they are sizing the box specifically to this one particular charger. And so the extra couple of inches could potentially mean that this box retains its viability longer into the future. So that was their large concern here too. So if I could just express their concern on that front.
And just thinking, I haven't seen with my own eyes what's installed on number 18. It does look like it's two brick widths wide. So that's smaller than what we have. I have no knowledge about what's under that. I know the box that was installed in front of six, if you look at the section detail that Nick showed earlier, you know, it's a foot on the surface, but then you lose about 1.5 or 2 inches on either side within the box, and then it tapers down towards the bottom, so you lose even more dimension. If that same profile were to, and that box that was installed is safe there, we discussed, for instance, leaving it open on the bottom, and then, you know, we actually discussed what rats could do to the bottom of an unprotected electrical box, and water as well. And so what was installed, if we had that same profile with a 6x6 cover plate, you would basically have 3 inches of spare room on the inside for actually holding the wand as well as the wire. The wire would not physically be able to curve to come out of the electrical hole that the electrical conduit that goes to the building. And so that word on the street was that other one didn't actually work in the way that ours actually works. The other detail is the little cutout at the top of the box that, like Sandra said, allows the cable to come out of the box while the car is being plugged in and generating or pulling power, and the top to be put down. So I haven't seen with my own eyes if the little 6x6 one has that cut out as well. I'm not privy to the details of that. It would have been nice for everyone on the street to get together and have a meeting and say, you know, here's mm-hmm. what we've done. I thought we were the first one, Sandra. I might be mistaken. Mm-hmm. We absolutely 500% wanted our box to be as small as physically possible. We completely agree with what you said, Mr. Kiefer, about wanting things to be as small as possible. I think the goal from the construction team was to make something safe that wouldn't cause trouble to the home that the conduit eventually dead ends into. Hence the reason for this fairly substantial box.
Right, and just one other quick clarifying question. The photo we saw before that shows the inside of the box when it's open, it looks like the cable is coming in from the side.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Is it, I'm just, again, and we probably, I don't know if it's productive to speculate as to how this smaller version across the way or down the street would actually work in practice, but is there not a way to arrange this such that, for example, if the cable comes in from the bottom on the one hand, or for example, to make the box bigger but the opening smaller?
It's a very good question.
Yeah, good question. I
was worried about water getting into the space, so that's why our box, that we have a side connection.
Mm-hmm. There's drainage at the
base on the bottom
of the box so that water doesn't carry into the home. In terms of a cover that's smaller than the box itself, I feel like someone needs to invent this for this purpose. I do think that, because of the thickness of the brick, that would be a little bit challenging. It would probably need to be a two-part assembly. I do know that this particular box comes in this size, and then, there's really no other offerings within this product line. If there were one that were 10 by 10, I think we could have probably done a little test and maybe tried to, find something that was like a tiny bit smaller, but this standard box, fit the functional needs for the charger. And yeah.
If I may just intersect a bit, though, I'm not sure that we could take that this is what it comes in standard as an explanation, because we have things custom made all the time, right? So, maybe somebody does need to invent one for this application. Maybe whatever that invention is becomes a new standard. I don't know. I just, from the discussion, it seems like we haven't really fully explored ways. Mm-hmm. Right, all I'm hearing is this is what we got, this is the standard. They want the flexibility, which I absolutely agree. But I do think that you could look a little more into how other people have done it, how what a custom build might look like to get it to be a little smaller.
Yeah, Commissioner Wen, thank you very much for that comment. I think in general, again, just to give you a little more perspective on our process, this isn't uncommon that we really want to make sure that we've exhausted all of the more desirable, at least from the perspective of our guidelines, alternatives before we approve something. And so we've historically asked applicants, it's not uncommon for us to ask applicants to go back to the drawing board, if you'll pardon the expression, and revisit what's actually possible. And again, We don't know, for example, that we don't know how the alternative that was approved, the other address down the street, works in practice. We don't know if you could make the box big, but the opening smaller. I mean, I'm just imagining in that case, for example, let's say you had the big box with a metal plate that's beneath the masonry, you know, that ostensibly forms a flange that accepts the box on the bottom and the masonry on the top. And then you have a smaller opening that's big enough to get the head out, but retains the larger box underneath. It seems like there are avenues that have not, we haven't been able to fully explore. And as a result, we haven't exhausted all the possible alternatives. And so I think we want a little more evidence that it just can't be done. Understanding the if that we're talking about potentially is accommodating multiple charger heads, making the thing usable by the homeowner, preventing the thing from being a trip hazard when it's in use and so forth. Any other commissioners have any questions or clarifications or comments on that? Commissioner Fleck, go ahead.
Well, I was a couple of thoughts, Chairman. One is it worth some investigation of the smaller implementations as to whether they're actually functional? Because they may have been approved in the past, but frankly, on a speculative basis, and real life experience may have yielded information that determines that the 4x4 line objective may not be as functionally effective as we might have hoped originally. So there was some interesting comments that maybe the real homeowner, you know, homeowner experience has shown that they're not adequately sized, even though the form factor here is different, because it's my understanding those smaller ones did not have the actual, it was simply a socket. It wasn't a receptacle for a cable that in effect extends out and goes to the car, and therefore the car doesn't have to have a cable carried around separately. So that's, you know, one observation. The other one, as we talk about this, I realized this situation, it's not necessarily like the door buzzer directory challenge we have, which will and is in fact ubiquitous throughout the community, but the situation where someone has rights to a parking spot directly in front of their property is, I think, by definition, only on the private ways. The public ways, you don't have the opportunity necessarily to lay claim to a parking spot directly in front of your home, which might mitigate some of our anxiety, not that it changes any of the fundamentals that were talked about, but the notion that we'd see a precedent, good or bad, proliferate throughout the neighborhood is unlikely, because if you live in on a normal public way, you wouldn't have the predictability of always having your car in front of your house, and therefore the investment in this would be unlikely. So that was just sort of the second thing that came to mind, not really for action, but just for reflection. But on the first point, you know, it may be worth doing a little bit of homework. Whether it's our responsibility or the homeowner's responsibility to truly understand whether those smaller sized receptacles are even efficient. We may, in other words, we may be pursuing something that just isn't functional and therefore is a bit of a pipe dream.
So this is Alice. I agree exactly with what Justin said. I know we need to get to public comment. We haven't had that yet, right? No.
Sure.
To public comment before we make any motions. But I think that the idea of doing some homework, which we've done in the past on a bunch of different kinds of issues to see what's working and it's, you know, the flexibility of the size is something I would really support.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else before we do, go to public comment?
I think one of the things that we have to really pay attention to as commissioners is that it's not as much a matter of whether it would happen on a private way or a public way. It's more a matter of we, this commission, maybe not the commissioners that are here right now, but this commission gave an okay for something. The drawings were submitted to the city, and everything that was agreed upon was completely ignored. Whether someone forgot or someone decided that they just were going to, you know, what's the old saying? Better to beg for forgiveness than ask for permission. And that's where we have that. If you look on the screen, we have a physical version of that statement. This was a situation where they moved ahead, even though there was knowledge that you had to go through the city before. And whatever oversight that might have been, that's kind of a strange statement. How could it be an oversight if in the first place these steps were taken? So I find that a little questionable. And I think that we really have to nip this kind of stuff in the bud. Because that's exactly what this is. Better to beg for forgiveness than ask for permission. So that's something that we should probably really think about. We're seeing more and more situations like that. And I would love to hear what the public has to say.
I have a comment.
Yeah, go ahead, Annette.
I think we're going to see more and more of these requests. And I agree that we need to exhaust every avenue because it's going to set a precedence, and we should know exactly what we're going into moving forward.
Okay. I think that is all the commissioners present have weighed in with clarifying questions or comments. So with that, why don't we go to public comment? Again, if you want to be heard on the record, please raise your hand in the Zoom according to the controls on your Zoom panel, and Nick will acknowledge you.
Great. First up we have is Holland with the Civic Association. Holland, go ahead.
Thank you, Nick. Our comment is, we support ratification of the EV charging port as installed. While the unit is bigger than the conceptual design submitted, the flush-mounted port installed next to the curb is minimally visible from a public way, as Lewisburg Square is a private way. See the photos at the end of this document. The design has minimal impact on the historic fabric of the neighborhood, especially compared to the numerous coal chutes, drains, and utility plates, some of which are much larger than this design. In fact, during installation, the applicant was able to remove the large utility plate on the sidewalk for a net gain of over 350 square inches of brick on the streetscape. We applaud the applicant's installation of this technology in a manner harmonious with the historic district. For this application, we reference the following district guidelines. A5, contemporary design for new buildings may be considered if such design is of excellent quality and is comparable with the size, scale, color, materials, and character of neighboring buildings and environment. And A6, all proposals shall show evidence that work will be executed with the highest quality material and workmanship. End of comment.
Great. Thank you, Holland. Next up we have is Rob Whitney. Rob, go ahead.
Sure. Oh, sorry.
No, Rob, you're muted.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I apologize. I submitted written comments as well, which I think they've been distributed. So I'll briefly add to that. I do applaud Commissioner Allen's comments. They basically are my same comments. This particular applicant had gone through a lengthy process previously with the commission and with the Civic Association, actually, and had numerous discussions and sort of came to an agreement on how, you know, minimal impact this charging station should be. Basically, having an outlet mounted onto the streetscape of roughly a 6-inch diameter or 4-inch diameter plate. For whatever reason, as Commissioner Allen noted, somehow along the way, they decided not to go ahead with that plan, to change the plan, not tell anybody, install it, and contrary to the guidelines of the Architectural Commission. I'm a little surprised by the Civic Association's comments, only because they're substantially different than they were 2 years ago without any significant explanation why. But in any event, I think it can be made smaller. I think clearly in my mind, the only reason it's this size is for the convenience of the owner who wants to be able to store their charging cable in a hole in the ground versus in their car. With respect to the comment raised that in 2 months or 3 months, potentially time, there'll be changes in the outlet design. I can tell you one of my best friends works in the charging industry, and that is not true. Instead, what he actually here By doing it this way, it makes it more difficult, because if there was simply an outlet, to the extent that there's a new charging head, an adapter could be easily put on the charging head and plugged into the outlet, and it would be really very simple. Here, if there's a change, you actually have to replace the entire charging cable that's now mounted in the ground. You have to run it back into the house, undo it, redo it. It's solely for the convenience. That's why this was done, for no other reason. I think that what they should be required to do, not only because they violated the rules and sort of disregarded and disrespected this commission, I think they should be basically go back to the original design, add in putting an outlet below a smaller plate that can easily be accessed, put a cable in their car like many electric vehicle drivers do, and charge it that way. Honestly, I would love to see these all over Beacon Hill, smaller versions, not this. Particularly on Charles Street, maybe on Cambridge Street, where people that are parking who have electric vehicles can simply plug into a charging, you know, an outlet on the streetscape and charge their vehicle really easily. That's what I would love to see in the future. Not this, but a system whereby everybody can adapt and use electric vehicles in the future with a de minimis, minimal impact on our streetscape. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. All right, I'm not seeing any other public comments, so we can close the public comment portion of this application.
Okay, just really quickly, I'm afraid I've just got two other very quick clarifying questions. Number one, there was mention made, I believe, in Holland from the Civic Association's comment about that effectively there was a net gain in the amount of brick on the sidewalk. To the applicants, can I just ask to Sandra or William, was there some other larger plate in this location before that's now been replaced by this and a bit more brick? Is that, did I understand that correctly, or was the plate somewhere else?
It was a plate that I think you can see it in Google Maps, but it was made obsolete through the construction that went forward for the house as a entire project. So yes, there was a plate in the sidewalk. I didn't have as great dimensions or notes about the size of it, but it is correct that there was something there previously that was made obsolete through the construction project. And so this is a lot smaller than what was there previously.
Okay, and it was either where this box is now or somewhere else adjacent near the front of the building.
Very adjacent. It was a little bit more centered on the sidewalk, I believe.
I think, okay. Chairman, slide 2 of the PDF presentation might use an existing condition photograph.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In the PowerPoint.
I got you. Let's see this one.
I believe it was more centered.
I'm sorry, Nick, to bounce you around the documents. But yeah, so if you zoom up page 2 and then zoom in the upper right photo, perhaps it's that oval-shaped
cover
plate that Holland was referring to?
Mm-hmm. Correct. That is correct.
I'm assuming that's number 6 that we're looking at.
That is true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that... I'm guessing and then, plate is no longer there from the other photos I've seen.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. And then
I don't know if that helps.
Indeed, it does. Thank you. And then Nick, I think the other question is to you. To the best of your recollection, the approval that was made at the other Lewisburg Square property for an EV charging port of smaller dimensions, was that simply an outlet, as has been described a moment ago, as distinct from a box
It's my understanding that was also a cord. I actually, this is a stop on the tour I give to some graduate students from my graduate school. I give it twice a year. And we talk about how we can integrate new technology into historic resources. I can't say for sure because my memory is, I don't remember, but I do think it was a plug similar to how this is set up.
So the cable is integrated into the outlet.
Correct. Yeah.
The box. It's not simply an outlet that requires you to take a external cable and attach it and so forth.
Could I follow up something Mr. Fleck said? And he described exactly that an upward facing outlet as opposed to sort of a conventional junction box dimension. And if someone had wanted to do a side mounted outlet, which you absolutely could do, would actually require a larger box under the surface, because then you would have to plug in the charger head as well as get the cable in there without a kink to it. So, you know, that was something we certainly looked at and talked about, is having an actual waterproof outlet under there. And it was determined that that would require a larger container underground. And the other trick was also trying to get the design so that when the plug is being used, obviously in the number 18 up the street, if it's not being in use, the cover plate is down flush with the pavement. If it actually is an upward facing junction box, sort of like what you would, which I use at my house, I've got kind of a dryer outlet in the side of a wall, and I plug the thing in right there next to my car in my parking garage, in my garage. If at number 18, it is an upward facing junction box in there, I would worry about water intruding into that outlet when it's not being in use. When it is being in use, if that is what's under there, you'd have to remove the plate. The plate would have to be in an open position, so hinged in an open position, which then is this trip hazard, which we're all trying to avoid.
Well, also, I would also add to that part of the reason we didn't do the outlet was that whatever extra charging cable is left once you've plugged it in and run it to your car, that ends up coiled on the sidewalk and becomes a tripping hazard. So the design that we proceeded with allows any extra cable to be underground so that there's nothing laying on the sidewalk that could potentially trip someone up who's walking. So that is a really good point that
we love working closely with Nick. We worked so closely with Nick on this entire project from the beginning. We walked around the block multiple times, looking at every square inch of this project. And I feel like we failed in this one component of the project, but this entire structure was rebuilt from the inside and out. And we absolutely, completely respect this commission. We enjoyed our first meeting with the commission, and we have enjoyed working very closely with Nick on this project and on projects subsequent to this project. So there is absolutely no disrespect towards this commission whatsoever. And just, sorry, I'm not trying to get defensive, other than I wanted to say out loud that we are not trying to get away with something. And if we have to come, if we have to do additional research and additional effort to answer the questions that are the very great, the excellent questions that have come up tonight, then so be it. We'll have to do that. We're willing and able to do that. I think the hope was that if this would meet with the commission's agreement, which it sounds like it has not. So, but we absolutely, we're here in front of you tonight, not trying to get around this, but we want to come to a conclusion as much as you want to.
Oh, thank you.
Mr. Chair, do you want a motion?
Absolutely. Well, do you want any emotions? There's something that I wanted to bring up. Everyone keeps on bringing up 18 or 11 Louisbird and saying whether it works or whether it doesn't work. Doesn't it stand to reason that if that plug is there because somebody has an electrical vehicle, if that plug wasn't working, wouldn't they have come back to us and said, hey, this isn't working. We need to do, you know, we need to update this. We need to upgrade this. So I find it a bit perplexing that we're trying to throw in extra steps that we probably don't need to throw in. If there is already an existing port for someone who has an electrical vehicle, again, I'm going to trust and believe that if they took the time the first time to come to us to get it installed, that if it was not working, they would probably reach out to us and say, hey, this isn't working. I need to do something different. So I don't understand why we're putting something out in the wind that maybe it works, maybe it doesn't work. If it doesn't work, that person is hopefully the grown adult that would turn to us and say, hey, it's not working. We need to do something different. So why are we putting an idea out there that it's possibly not working? I don't understand that. It's like we're adding hoops to this. And, you know, that's not logical.
Yeah.
You know, we just need to stay focused on what we have, pure and simple.
Mark, it sounds like we're almost starting to talk in circles. It seems like half the commission is divided. Perhaps a subcommittee where we visit the site might be something worth doing.
Okay. I was just going to suggest, I think, in the interest of trying to move this to a closure, at least for this evening, William and Sandra, we do appreciate you coming before us and certainly answering to the violation that's been issued. We appreciate the further context and description of both, you know, the rationale for what was installed and sort of how you got there and how it came to be that, something different than what was specified in your original application wound up being installed. I do think it sounds like it seems pretty clear that we don't have a consensus, certainly not a strong consensus, but I think really no consensus among my colleagues with respect to ratifying what has been installed. So I think one way or the other, the way we need to move forward is to at least, I am okay. I appreciate, Aaron, your comment about, if it didn't work, wouldn't they have tried something different? On the other hand, we're here tonight because perhaps ironically, it was determined that something didn't work and they did do something different. I think it would behoove us to, as I said at the outset, try to better clarify what the parameters are that might ultimately form a de facto standard for these things, because notwithstanding the fact that this is a private way and notwithstanding the fact that the circumstance is certainly as ubiquitous as a lot of other features, and notwithstanding the fact that we're talking about the visibility from the public way, that it would behoove all of us to just really try to get this right so that it can inform decisions so that we can have a consistent and reasonable and defensible record of decision going forward. To my mind, I am willing to give this applicant leave at least another month to try to clarify what exactly are the alternatives for this particular application for their own needs as they've described them, which may or may not be consistent with their neighbors who've also installed one of these, to determine the extent to which it would be feasible to accommodate their needs with a smaller design. In other words, they haven't had leave to figure out, can you make the box bigger? But the opening smaller, or if the so I don't know that it's necessary, given their requirements, for example, to use an outlet that doesn't contain a plug or the cable and so forth. But I'm willing to give them leave at least a month to try to determine more conclusively and either find a solution that allows them to revise this installation so that it is consistent with the prior approval or otherwise demonstrate why where this has been approved with smaller dimensions in the past, it's simply either not feasible or not working.
Don't you need a motion, or do you want a motion to do that, Mr. Chair?
Well,
Mark, real quick.
Yeah.
Whatever happens, we will need also approval from the Lewisburg Square Neighborhood Association because they have to sign off on this as well. So they signed off on the smaller version. So we'll also need a letter from them saying that they're okay with whatever option that we decide.
Okay, and just to William and Sandra, I take it we don't have such a letter with respect to what has been installed?
Not at this time, no.
Okay, so there again, I think is a further maybe reason to put this back at least a month. Nick, if it's just a violation, and again, let me just clarify procedurally, have they made application to ratify this?
They did submit an application to ratify, so you can choose to continue it until next month, and then I can send them a continuance letter.
Okay.
I'll move that it be continued for a month with the request that the applicant do some due diligence about other installations, particularly on Lewisburg Square, involving similar devices.
And if I could add a friendly amendment and likewise further research to determine if the requirements for this installation could be met within the parameters laid out in the specific dimensions of the prior approval.
I have no problem with that.
Okay. Sorry, was that a second?
A second.
Okay, so it has been moved and seconded to continue this application to next month to give the applicant leave to do prior further research on a remedy, an alternative remedy. I will vote Commissioner Allen.
Aye.
Commissioner Kiefer votes aye. Commissioner Fleck.
Aye.
Commissioner Given.
Aye.
Mr. Richmond.
Aye.
And Commissioner Wen.
Aye.
Okay, the motion carries. Thank you very much for your attention again in this matter. Sorry it took a while, but I think it was a productive discussion. Again, it's a small item, but has potentially big implications going forward. So I appreciate your patience and your forbearance in dealing with it.
Yeah,
you'll get a letter from Nick on the details. Thanks.
Thank you all for the continuance. We appreciate the conversation too.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks very much for coming. Okay, and a note here. There was an application on the design review portion of the agenda for 1 Chestnut Street, and that has been withdrawn from the applicant. So I believe the only thing left, Nick, with respect to the formal agenda is administrative review, and here we are. Any questions or comments from the commissioners on any of the items on administrative review?
Yes, I need to recuse myself on the request from 39 Bremer Street.
Thanks, Alice. For the record, let the record reflect that Commissioner Richmond has recused herself from the vote on administrative review with respect and only with respect to the application for 39 Bremer Street.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
I need to recuse myself from, I think it's 141 Charles Street.
Okay, let the record reflect that Commissioner Given has recused herself with respect and only with respect to application for 141 Charles Street on administrative review. Okay, anyone else? And Nick, I'll just ask because I've messed this up multiple times in the past. We don't take public comment on the administrative review.
You do take public comment for administrative review. Yes.
See, that's like three times now. All right. Would anyone like to be heard on the record with respect to the administrative reviews? Again, raise your hand in the Zoom if you want to be heard.
I'm not seeing any hands raised, so we can go ahead and close the public comment section for this part of the hearing.
Okay, with the aforementioned specific recusals, do we have a motion to approve the administrative review items en masse?
A motion to approve.
Thank you. Arian, do we have a second?
I second.
Okay, we'll vote, Commissioner. And again, with understanding and incorporating the prior specific recusals, Commissioner Allen.
Aye.
Commissioner Kiefer votes aye. Commissioner Fleck.
Aye.
Commissioner Given.
Aye.
Commissioner Richmond.
Aye, except for 39 Bremer Street.
All right, thank you. Thank Commissioner Wen.
Aye.
Okay, the administrative review items are approved with the aforementioned specific recusals. Now we have the ratification of the public hearing minutes for the February meeting of the Beacon Hill Architectural Commission. Any comments, revisions, questions from the commissioners on last month's hearing minutes? Okay, hearing none. Do we have a motion? Do I hear a motion to approve?
I move.
Do I hear a second?
I second that.
Thank you. We'll vote. Commissioner Allen.
Aye.
Commissioner Kiefer votes aye. Commissioner Fleck?
Aye.
Commissioner Gibbon?
Aye.
Mr. Richmond?
Aye.
And Commissioner Wen?
A recusal, because I was not there.
Thank you very much. So with the recusal, let the record reflect Commissioner Wen's recusal, and otherwise the ratification of the minutes is approved. Nick, staff updates, take it away.
Thank you, everybody. This is a productive hearing. So a couple updates I just wanted to make everyone aware of. So I just want to let you know that Curtis Kemeny has been appointed to the commission. He just finished his training yesterday, so he will be joining us in April. Unfortunately, he had a prior commitment this evening, so he could not make it. So we're welcoming him on board. And then as soon as they receive their training, Sandra Steele and Maurice Feingold will also be added to the commission as soon as they receive their training. So we expect to have that done in a couple weeks. If you have not done already, please forward over the confirmation that you received the commissioner handbooks for 2023. Just for a matter of clarification, there haven't been really many updates with the exception of the updated application. Everything else is the same from 2022. Beacon Hill Architectural District expansion. So there will be a hearing on Monday at noon at the City Council, where yours truly will be there testifying, and along with some other members of the team to answer any questions that City Council might have in relation to the district expansion. For those of you that aren't aware, the district is planned or proposed, I should say, to be expanded all the way to the edge of Cambridge Street. Currently, the boundary is 40 feet from the curb of Cambridge Street, and which means that the facades that are directly abutting Cambridge Street on the Beacon Hill side, the south side, are not currently under our purview. It's the intention to include these buildings into the purview, including several non-contributing buildings, so that the commission would have a say in future landmarks that would be constructed on those parcels if the property owner chose to do so. So that will be on Monday. I believe it's at noon. The information can be found on the City Council's website. If anyone needs information about that, feel free to reach out to me and I can send you information.
Nick, can I just ask, is that the only expansion, the one you just described?
For Beacon Hill, correct, yes.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Yes. And then just a quick reminder to anyone that's in the audience is that Ring doorbells, though approvable in certain circumstances, they do require an application to the commission for review and approval. If anyone has any questions in terms of what the requirements are for receiving approval, feel free to reach out to myself, and you can access my contact information through boston.gov/landmarks. And that's it. That's all I have. Questions, comments? Cool. That's it, Mark.
Thank you, Nick. Okay, I think there being no further business, I will move that we adjourn.
Wow.
Second.
Aye. Okay, we'll vote. Commissioner Allen?
Aye.
Commissioner Kiefer votes aye. Commissioner Fleck?
Aye.
Commissioner Gibbon?
Aye.
Mr. Richmond?
Aye.
And Commissioner Wen?
Aye.
Thank you. We are adjourned. Thank you all very much.
See you, everybody.
See you soon.
Bye-bye.